Up next, we have our book reading program, Ohomoni Iyotaka, read by Gail Hubling.
The Lakota Way, Stories and Lessons for Living by Joseph M. Marshall III. Chapter 11, Generosity. Chante yuke, to give, to share, to have a heart. The story of Brings the Deer. Sometimes it's easy to forget that we live in a place, this world, where many other beings live too. As two-leggeds, humans, we believe we are the most powerful beings to walk the earth. We don't seem to understand that the power that comes from being numerous is not the same as the power that comes from being wise or kind. Long, long ago, it is said that our people lived in the cold North Country. No one knows for how long, but they had to find a new place to live because there came several winters of near starvation. The snows were very, very deep, and the great curved horn, the caribou, which they hunted for food, seemed to have gone elsewhere to live. Only a few were found, and they were old and sick, and their meat was tough and stringy. Finally, the people noticed that the wolves were gone, and they knew they had more than likely moved to some other place where the deer were plentiful. That winter was very hard. The meat from the few old and sick deer had to be given out in small portions, and many old people died because they gave their meat to the very young. The council of old men talked and talked about the difficulty that was a visitor in their lodges, and decided it would be wise to do as the wolves had done. It was time to find a new place to live, and perhaps when the deer returned, they could return as well. In the spring, after the snows began to melt, those that were still alive made preparations and set out toward the south. There were many forests to the south, they had heard, and perhaps there were more deer to be found there. Day after day, for many, many days, they traveled, and it was not long before they had eaten all of the food they carried with them. It took all the skills of their hunters to find rabbits and squirrels enough to feed everyone. A sudden spring blizzard came upon them, but they were able to pitch their small lodges to the shelter of a forest and hide from the icy breath of the north wind and the sting of the flying snow. The blizzard howled for days, and there was nothing to be done but huddle inside the lodges and wait. Finally there came a dawn that was silent and very cold. People emerged from their small lodges to see that a new blanket of snow covered the land from horizon to horizon. There was a great silence also, and it seemed that they were the only beings on the face of the earth. The old men advised everyone to gather wood and build fires while they talked among themselves. Staying warm was necessary, of course, and the people knew how to warm themselves in winter. The greater worry was their empty food containers. If something more than a few rabbits and squirrels could not be found, they would starve. The old men had a plan. All the men were sent into the forest to find as many rabbits and squirrels as they could. They were able to gather enough meat to last several days. Then the old men revealed their plan. Two of their best young hunters were to be sent deep into the forest to find deer. All the squirrel and rabbit meat was dried and prepared for them. That night, the two hunters who had been selected prepared their weapons and made ready for their journey. As the new dawn broke, the two hunters tied on snowshoes and headed into the forest. This was new country to them. They didn't know the land as they had in their old home. They paused often to look at their back trail so that they could find their way back to their people. The forest was thick and dark, but many of the trees were not unknown to them, especially the wazee, a pine that grew thick and tall. As yet, they had seen no animals except for squirrels and rabbits, and they found no tracks. They wondered what kind of animals they would see in this new country. The one they didn't want to meet was the great white bear, who was the most powerful and fiercest of all the four-leggeds. It took many hunters with long lances to kill one white bear. They ate their dried meat only a little at a time, and when a squirrel or a rabbit was close enough for a good shot, one of them would kill it with an arrow so they could have a little fresh meat. If there was a miss, the arrow was lost in the deep snow, and arrows could not be wasted. An arrow lost meant one less chance. They were mindful of such things because they knew that the hopes of their people walked with them, and they were determined to be successful. And so each morning they prayed for strength, skill, and courage, and each day they faced the cold and the uncertainty as they moved deeper and deeper into the forest. After many days of travel, they saw tracks that looked like deer, but they were small. The great curved horned deer of the north had large white split hooves. The tracks they found were those of small split hooves. Still, they were encouraged and followed the tracks. Many days on the trail had weakened them, and even though they had been very careful, their food bag was nearly empty. They awoke one morning to a cold wind that made it difficult to light a fire. But worse than that, it wiped out the tracks they had been following. There was nothing to be done but wait out the wind. The next dawn was cold again, but it was clear and calm, so they set out once more. To remain strong enough to face the cold and the deep snow, they had to eat. But unless they found fresh meat soon, they would not have the strength to finish their hunt. They found no tracks the next day, and the forest was strangely quiet. That night, as they rested and warmed themselves by their fire, the two hunters spoke of what to do. "Our relatives are waiting. They are hungry," said Seize the Bear. "We must go on." "Yes," agreed Left Hand, "but we should return to the meadow where we saw the tracks, and we must hunt until we find something, or until we no longer have the strength to walk." They found the meadow the next day and a few tracks the snow had not covered. But walking through the deep snow on snowshoes had sapped their strength, and what the snow didn't take from them, the cold did. They made camp and ate the last of their food. By sunset of the next day, all they had was a fire to keep the cold away, and it barely did that. They had no food. The next day was the same. They had found no tracks of any animal, and each day thereafter they could feel their strength leaving them a little at a time. After that, they began to stumble often, and soon they couldn't travel long without stopping to rest. It was the afternoon, and they had managed to build a fire as they rested. Left Hand had fallen into a snow-filled gully, and it had taken all of Seize the Bear's strength to help him out. Both hunters shivered as he sat sadly staring into the flames. Suddenly there was a crashing through the trees, and a form dashed past them and into that same gully. It was a deer, a kind they had never seen before, with a gray coat and great forked antlers. It fell into the gully onto its back and struggled mightily to turn over. The hunters couldn't believe what they saw. "Your bow!" shouted Seize the Bear. "We must shoot it quickly." They moved as swiftly as they could, but the cold had numbed their fingers and they had difficulty placing their arrows on the strings of their bows. The great gray deer had gained its feet and was nearly out of the gully before they could shoot. But two arrows flew straight and the deer was mortally wounded. With the last great leap, he flew over the gully's rim and then fell in a heap, never to move again. That night, the hunters feasted on the deer's heart and their strength returned. The next day, they made drag poles on which to load the carcass and pull it through the snow. It was a very large deer, but it had small cloven hooves, and there was much meat that they would save for those who waited. They began their return journey strengthened by their success. Not knowing what to expect, they took turns guarding the deer at night. It was on the second night of the return journey that Seize the Bear thought he was having a dream. As he sat by the fire huddled beneath his robe, a skinny coyote appeared in the firelight and spoke. "It has been a hard winter," Coyote said, "and my family is hungry. If you are a kind being, you will give us some of your deer meat. We would need only a little to get us by." Seize the Bear rubbed his eyes, but the coyote was still there, sitting just at the edge of the firelight. He woke Left Hand. "I think I'm having a strange dream. Look there and tell me what you see," he said. Left Hand looked around and saw the coyote. "A coyote," he said. "I have never seen one this close to a fire before." "You are great hunters, and I know you have good hearts," said the coyote. Left Hand was astonished. "I am an old woman and have lived a long life, but it is for my family that I beg your kindness. We need only a little of your meat," she said. Left Hand laughed. "We are having the same strange dream because I heard that coyote ask for our meat." "It is not a dream," realized Seize the Bear. "Look how thin she is, and she is old." "We cannot help her," sniffed Left Hand. "We must take this meat home to our relatives. They are hungry, too." "We cannot let her and her family starve," said Seize the Bear. "The spirits were kind to us by sending this great deer. We can share a little of it." So saying, he slipped off a strip from the hind quarter and tossed it to the coyote. "Listen that night, and my family will sing our gratefulness," Coyote said as she took the meat and disappeared into the darkness. "That was a foolish thing to do," said Left Hand. 2 days later, as the hunters rested at midday, a flock of magpies alighted in the branches around them. "We are hungry," one of them said. "It is winter," Left Hand replied angrily. "Winter is a time of hunger. Our people wait for this meat that we have killed. They are very hungry." "The wolves took the insides of the deer you left behind," said the head magpie. They left us a little, but it was only a very little. We are hungry. Before a left hand could stop him, seized the bear, cut several thin strips of meat and tossed them to the magpies. Calling loudly, they swooped from the trees and took the meat. You are kind, said the head magpie. We will repay you. Hereafter, if you do not see us or hear us, it will be a sign of hard times. If there is to be plenty, we will come and announce it. Then the magpies were gone as quickly as they had come. That was a foolish thing to do, said Left Hand. They traveled as far as they could each day, of course, making camp as the sun went down and then starting again as the dawn broke. Dragging the deer on the poles across deep snow was not easy, but they knew their relatives were waiting, and who knew if they had found anything to eat while the hunters were away. As they stopped briefly to rest, a gray shadowy form approached through the trees. It was a large wolf, and he had a badly injured foot. The hunters were wary. They had never seen a wolf so close. If you are here to ask for meat, we cannot give any more, shouted Left Hand. I am sad to hear you, said the wolf. As you can see, I have hurt my foot, and although I have been able to find the deer, I cannot chase them. My wife has given birth, and I must take her fresh meat so that she can suckle the young ones. Our story is sad as well, replied Left Hand. Our people are starving. They have not eaten for many, many days. Yes, said the wolf. The winter has been hard for all of us, and I thought there may be kindness in your hearts. There is, said Seize the Bear. We have just enough to share. In spite of Left Hand's protests, he sliced off a chunk of meat and tossed it to the wolf. I am grateful, said Wolf. For your kindness, you shall have my skill as a hunter. Left Hand was very angry. See what you have done, he shouted. You have given away most of our meat. What will we tell our people? They sent us out because we are the best hunters. We are fortunate that this deer fell into that gully full of snow. If he had not, we would be freezing to death somewhere. Yet you have given meat to every beggar who has come to you. I will tell them the truth, replied Seize the Bear. The old ones have taught us that it is good to share. Is that not the truth? No more, shouted Left Hand. There is barely enough to feed our people now. He traveled in silence thereafter with Left Hand hanging onto his anger. They made camp in the shelter of an old river bank. I think we are one more day's walk from our lodges, Seize the Bear said. Left Hand gathered firewood and kept his silence. It was a fox who came next that night while Seize the Bear was on watch and Left Hand was sleeping. I have never seen such a hard winter, he said. The snow is so deep it is difficult for me with my small feet. The rabbit can run on top of the snow while I sink in. I wonder if you'd be so kind as to give me some of your meat. Seize the Bear glanced at Left Hand sleeping soundly beneath his robe, remembering the young man's anger. Yes, he whispered to the fox, I think there is enough to share. Thereupon he sliced off some succulent ribs and gave them to the fox. I am grateful, said Fox. My people are very skilled at hiding. For your kindness, that skill shall be yours. In the morning, of course, Left Hand could see immediately that more of the deer was gone, and his anger burst like the sudden flight of the prairie grouse. I cannot travel with you any longer, he said. You have given away most of the meat. What will we give to our people? There is enough, insisted Seize the Bear. There is not enough for us all, shouted Left Hand. I am returning to our lodges alone, ahead of you. I must tell our old men what you have done. See that you do not give away any more of our food. I will bring some young men to help carry what is left. True to his word, Left Hand departed angrily. Seize the Bear was left to struggle with the deer. Traveling on the ice of frozen streams, he was able to make some progress, but it was still very difficult to drag the deer by himself. The first night alone, he was so exhausted he built a snow cave and slept without a fire. As he was preparing to travel the next morning, he came across a hawk with an injured wing. What has happened to you? Asked Seize the Bear. The hawk flashed his great yellow eyes. I fought with the short-tailed cat. He attacked me after I had caught a rabbit. Now I cannot fly until my wing is strong again. I have not eaten in many, many days. Seize the Bear gave the hawk a chunk of deer meat. He hung it up in a tree so the hawk could be safe away from other hunters. I am grateful, said the hawk. I have not seen your kind of people here. We have come from the north, said Seize the Bear. The winters are very hard, and the great curved horned deer moved away. To keep from starving, we had to move also. After traveling for many, many days, we came to a forest and pitched our lodges. We were out of food, so our people sent two of us out to hunt. We hunted until our food ran out. and then we killed this deer. He had trapped himself in deep snow. Follow this forest until you come to the lake country, advised the hawk. The hunting there is very good. The forests are filled with large and small deer. When the snows melt, you can catch fish from the lakes. Thank you, said Seize the Bear. My people will be glad to hear that news. That afternoon, he reached his people's lodges. He hid what was left of the deer in an old hollow tree and entered the camp. The old men, the leaders, were waiting for him. Left Hand has told us what has happened, he was told. Now it is for you to speak for your side of the story. Seize the Bear did not hold back the truth and told everything as it happened. We have brought back meat, he said, and I think it will make us strong enough to travel south. The hawk told me that the hunting in the lake country is very good. Some food is better than nothing, one of the old men said, and if your friend the hawk tells the truth, we can build our new homes in the lake country. Seize the Bear felt very sad to see the disappointed faces of his people. There would be enough food to go around, but there would have been more if he had not given much of it away. With his head hanging down, he led the men to where the meat was hanging. In that hollow tree, he said, it is there. Left Hand was the first in, and he grabbed the deer's leg and pulled. It was very heavy, so he asked for help. Finally, four young men had to pull the deer out of the tree. To everyone's great surprise, the deer was whole. This cannot be, cried Left Hand. There was barely half when I left him yesterday. I cannot understand this. As the men stood around looking at the carcass of the great deer, there appeared a ghostly white form of a great deer with white large forked antlers. The men backed away in fear. I am the deer who live in the forest, said the great white deer. There are many of us, and our flesh will give you strength. We ask in return that you always show your gratefulness for the gift of our life. If you do this, we will always be here to help you. Generosity is a good thing to have, for we are all travelers together on this earth. The great white deer disappeared into the forest. The men returned to the camp with the deer, and that night there was a great feast. Somehow there was more than enough meat to go around, and some to save as well. Seize the Bear was honored, and he was given the new name of Brings the Deer. After he had rested, he hunted again and returned with another deer. And as the great white deer had asked, he paused at the body of the dead gray deer and spoke a word of thanksgiving. The people were strengthened and were anxious to travel. When the warm spring winds melted the last snows, they broke camp and went south. There they found the land of plenty the hawk had described to the man whose name was now Brings the Deer. Brings the Deer became the most skillful hunter the people had ever seen. It seemed as though he had powers and abilities that no other man had. And through his life, he always seemed to know when hard times lay ahead. He was seen to toss scraps of meat to the magpies that came around the village. Soon all the people did likewise. And it was said of him that he would smile whenever the coyotes sang their evening songs. Left Hand had a difficult life. He was nearly killed by a bear one summer and almost drowned while trying to spear fish. More than that, strange things seemed to happen to him more often than to anyone else. Once a great wind came with a rainstorm, and the only lodge in the village blown over was his. Many wondered quietly why it was that his bows broke quite often during a hunt. Perhaps it was because of the difficulties that visited his life that Left Hand didn't smile very often. Many men hunted with Brings the Deer, and many brought their sons to him so that they could learn his skills. There was a small ritual that he taught everyone. Each time a deer was killed in the hunt, he would pause for a quiet moment and then he would lay down a bundle of sage as an offering. To this day, there are still Lakota hunters who would pause to speak a word of thanksgiving for the gift of the life of a deer. From the earth and from the heart. If Lakota societal values seemed to discourage accumulation of material possessions, it was also true that generosity was encouraged and exemplified. Paraphrasing an ancient sentiment helps us understand why generosity is necessary. The Earth Mother gives us all that she has. We must do the same. Generosity, therefore, is a timeless virtue that lives in the heart. Indeed, the literal translation of the Lakota word for generosity, chante yuke, means has a heart. One of the sacred ceremonies of the pipe brought to us and taught by the white buffalo calf maiden is the hunka, which means to forever move. The earth tells us, I shall forever be or move as your mother. We are given assurance that no matter how good or how bad we are, no matter how happy or miserable, because we are children of the earth, she will always love us and provide for us. Therefore, our concept and practice of generosity comes from the earth itself. Our stories tell us that the white buffalo calf maiden came to us a few thousand years ago. So as far as we're concerned, we've been around a while. And in that time, though we have experienced change, life did not ever change as swiftly and with as much difficulty as it has in the past 300 years, and especially in the past 150 years. Prior to the sudden changes experienced by the past three or four generations, we lived a primitive lifestyle. As with any human society anywhere, we had the basic needs of food, shelter, clothing, and security. We provided for those needs by hunting and gathering. In the bigger picture, our lifestyle was dictated by the environment around us. In other words, our ancestors didn't make any arbitrary decision to be hunter-gatherers. They had to function as such because it was the best and most logical method of survival. Like most of the peoples who lived on the prairie, our ancestors were nomadic. Camps or villages were moved primarily to accommodate the activities of hunting and gathering. Our primary food resource was the bison, a migratory herd animal, although it also provided materials for shelter and a variety of other necessities as well. We also hunted other large game, the deer, for example, and smaller game, such as rabbits. We gathered various food and medicinal plants in season. Among them were wild oats, prairie turnips, peppermint, apples, plums, and a variety of berries. Obviously, our livelihood was derived directly from the earth, in keeping with her promise. Because she was so generous with us, we had to demonstrate the same generosity in our relationships with all living things. The earth shared with us and taught us to share. One of the most enriching customs still practiced on every Lakota reservation is the giveaway. It is simply that stuff is given away in celebration, in observance, or in memoriam. We Lakota need only the slightest reason to get together to feast or dance or both. Every summer there are powwows on every reservation and in urban communities where there is more than one Indian. We eat and we dance and we have a good time. But there is more to it than that. We are sharing. We share the food, the dances, and the good times. Rarely is there a powwow where some special ceremony is not performed. Usually a traditional name-giving, the honoring of someone's accomplishment, the honoring of a veteran or veterans, or a memorial. Whatever the special ceremony, it is done very publicly. For example, a family will bestow a traditional Lakota name on a child, and anyone who wishes can watch and then join in the dancing to honor the recipient of the new name. Then the child's family does the giveaway. In appreciation for everyone's attention, participation, and good wishes, boxes, bags, and baskets full of stuff are given away. Stuff can be anything from candy bars to horses. The usual giveaway items are star quilts, blankets, sheets, scarves, pillowcases, towels, washcloths, soap, silverware, clocks, watches, costume jewelry, shawls, sunglasses, thermos jugs, pens, and so on. At the conclusion of the giveaway, at least one person, though frequently several, publicly expresses appreciation for the excellent gifts received and commends the family for a fine ceremony. And then there is more dancing. Giveaways are an especially significant part of memorials. A memorial is a gathering and a feast, usually a year after a death, to honor the deceased person. It is in keeping with the releasing the spirit ceremony brought to us by the white buffalo calf maiden. This observance allows the family and the community to reconcile with the death and enables the spirit of the deceased to make the transition into the spirit world. There is always a feast where the family of the deceased serves those in attendance. Prayers are offered and a revered elder known for his or her wisdom counsels about life and death. The occasion is concluded with the giveaway. The giveaway, as a significant part of many occasions, observations, and ceremonies, is so much more than the obvious. It is a mechanism for sharing. The giving of material gifts symbolizes the giving away, the sharing of joy, honor, or sorrow. When the gift is accepted, the recipient also accepts the joy, the honor, or the burden of sorrow. Generosity should not be limited to humans, however. All living things are related because we are all children of the earth, and everything we do affects the earth and everything on it, including the human race. The more water we pollute, the less there is for us to drink. The more land we contaminate, the less we have to grow crops. The more forests we cut down, the less oxygen there is for us to breathe. We humans have made the earth needy by our greed and selfishness, both rooted in the idea that the earth was created for us. Nothing could be further from the truth. We are of the earth. The earth has promised to care for and provide for us no matter who or what we are. We must understand that we are stewards of the land, and as such we have a sacred responsibility to all our relatives to seriously and thoughtfully live up to it. This responsibility is to the present generation as well as those yet to come. As a species, we humans have come far because of the generosity of the earth. She has given us a home as well as the means to raise ourselves to lofty heights, if only in our own minds. It is far past the time to repay her with our generosity. We Lakota believe there are many roads in life, but that there are two that are the most important, the red road and the black road. They represent the two perspectives to every situation, the two sides of every person, the two choices we frequently face in life. The red road is the good way, the good side, and the right choice. It is a narrow road fraught with dangers and obstacles, and it is extremely difficult to travel. The black road is the bad way, the bad side, the wrong choice. It is wide and very easy to travel. The red road and the black road appear in many of our stories, not as roads, but as the personifications of right and wrong, good and bad, light and dark. The two hunters in the story of Brings a Deer are an example. One hunter is not generous. He doesn't want to share. The other is most generous and gladly sees to the needs of others. Consider the ultimate fate of each hunter. Left Hand, who was not inclined to share, was frequently faced with negative consequences and had a hard life. Brings the Deer is generous, almost to a fault, but he is rewarded with the skills and abilities of those he helped. Generosity has its rewards. The Earth Mother appears as the Great White Deer and asks for nothing more than a simple acknowledgement of the gift of life. One must pause and consider the human species and wonder which hunter we have been. Furthermore, how have we acknowledged the gift of life from the earth? Generosity has its rewards. The lack of it has consequences. In the past, the accumulation of material goods among the Lakota was not unknown, but it wasn't done in the pursuit of wealth. It was done as a hedge against hard times and to help anyone who ran short. Still, it wasn't practical for a nomadic people to accumulate too much, because it only meant more to haul when the camp was moved, which was at least two or three times a year. The more you owned, the more you had to haul. A certain man had many possessions because he was reluctant to part with anything he owned. His dwelling was filled with all manner of things, and he had a large herd of horses to carry it all each time the village moved. Though he had all those fine things, he had no friends, and he was getting old and didn't want to spend his last days alone. He sensed that his time was drawing near, and he wanted the people to think and speak well of him after he died. So he spoke to the oldest woman in the village. "What is the answer?" he asked. "I do not want to spend my last days alone." "Be generous," the old woman replied. The old man pondered the woman's advice and then sent the camp crier among the people to announce that he would make a feast and that everyone was invited. The day of the feast came and the people gathered. True to his word, the old man fed all the people. Then he gave away all of his possessions, all of his horses, and even his lodge. He left himself with only the clothes he wore, no lodge to sleep in and no horse to ride. But that night he was invited to sleep in someone's lodge, and the next night in another lodge. And so it was until the old man died. He had no possessions, but he had many friends. And it was spoken of him that he was a generous man. And that concludes Chapter 11.
This program is funded in part by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Thank you for listening to Ohomani Iotaka on KDKO 89.5 FM.